Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about Darien Scheme, a colony of the Kingdom of Scotland, and it lasted for 2 years between 1698 and 1700. So this is a good, a good 75 years before the American Revolution. There's a Scottish Kingdom of Scotland colony with its flag, and let me describe its flag. Its flag is completely red with two lines at the bottom indicating the sea and a sun rising up from it. And it's the most incredible flag whatsoever. And it wanted to set up a capital of New Edinburgh. Isn't that beautiful? A capital of New Edinburgh. And it's in Panama. Just the most amazing, just mind-blowing stuff at that time. Now, if I can say, this is a piece of history which is, we'll find out how important it is, but it's one of those incredible wacky things in the sort of Pirates of the Caribbean and stuff like that. That sort of time, the high seas, that sort of romantic era of the Caribbean. In the middle of this, plung Scotland. And Scotland, you think of haggis, coldness, kilts, and that type of stuff. Sort of a northern hemisphere, you know, like there's France and Spain, but Scotland's a bit more icy on the idea of this. And what's so interesting is these chunks of knowledge. So there's a garbage truck coming through at the moment, so you're going to hear that in the background. This is truly amazing stuff. So occasionally I come across amazing knowledge, molecules, amazing pieces of maths, which I'll try and get. They are sort of great and profound. I think life is profound. But occasionally there's this stuff of sort of, let's go into and really research this. This is unusual for this, and let's really research this. And from this, it exposes deep and deep research. It's like this never-ending warren of information. For me, I think there's this view. It's a bit like activated charcoal. Activated charcoal, you get your lump of carbon, and get it to burn in such a way that it can only burn these nanometer size wormholes through it. So you've got this chunk of carbon full of these nanometer wormholes, and you have to burn it very precisely with an oxygen concentrate, just enough so it can just, the ember can be just keep alight long enough for these little carbon holes to burn through. And this is a little bit much like this in terms of, let's go into it. And I suppose I have the luxury of time to go into it. So let's read about the Darien Scheme, and I'll spell it to you. It's Darien Scheme. And bear in mind, there were schemes like this in Australia. The first colonies, or some colonies in some areas, were unsuccessful. Like the Perth colony was initially, the first colony, which was 100 years afterwards, was unsuccessful. Australia was nearly unsuccessful. We nearly starved. And, of course, a lot of the English colonies were unsuccessful coming across. But here, South America, poor South American. So it had a population of 1,700, 2,500. Australia, for the first couple of years, their first British colony had a population just under 1,000, to give you an idea of how that went through. The Darien Scheme was an unsuccessful attempt at establishing a Scottish colony on the Isthmus of Panama. Of course, I was reading Panama, the Panama flag got me. I thought that's great. Let me understand a bit more about it. I wanted to understand the COVID-19 implications of it. My discovery of Panama, the key interesting points there is, besides the canal and Rodriguez and stuff like that, it has abolished its standing army. It has the United States behind them, and so the United States Army went in and neutralized its army, and afterwards it said, oh well, we won't have an army anymore. So it doesn't have a standing army, and it has never used anything else but US dollars. It began to print its own money, which had a parity of 1-to-1, and no one trusted it, and so they they had produced money for 7 days, and so this Panamanian money is one of the most valuable collectible items that was produced for such a short time. Okay, so it was looking at Panama on the Gulf of Darien, so that's the name of this place, a place called the Gulf of Darien. Gee whiz, I don't quite understand it. The aim was for a colony to have an overland route that connected the Pacific and Atlantic Ocean. From its contemporary time to the present day, claims have been made that the undertaking was beset by poor planning, provisioning, divided leadership, a lack of demand for trade goods, particularly caused by the English trade blockade, devastating epidemics of disease, collusion between English East India Company and the English government to frustrate it, and the failure to anticipate the Spanish Empire's military response. Or all of the above. Isn't that incredible? It was finally abandoned in March 1700 after a siege by Spanish forces, which also blockaded the harbour. That's just... thank you. You can imagine the confused history which would pursue if this piece of history got through. As the Company of Scotland was backed by approximately 20% of all the money circulating in Scotland, its failure left the entire lowlands in substantial financial ruin, and was an important factor in weakening their resistance to the Act of Union completed in 1707. The land where the Darien colony was built in the modern province of Gunnayalla is virtually uninhabited today. Isn't that most incredible? Or it's not unlike Botany Bay, isn't it? But it's uninhabited today, which means that they probably had a fear of natives as well. The origins. In the late 17th century, which is 1600, was a difficult period for Scotland, as it was for much of Europe. The years 1695 to 97 saw catastrophic famine in present-day Estonia, Finland, Latvia, Norway, Sweden, plus an estimated 2 million deaths in France and northern Italy. Scotland's economy was relatively small, its range of exports very limited, and it was a weak position in relation to England, its powerful neighbour, with which it was in personal union but not yet political union. In an era of economic rivalry in Europe, Scotland was incapable of protecting itself from the effects of English competition and legislation. The kingdom had no reciprocal export trade, and it once thriving industries such as shipbuilding were in deep decline. Goods that were in demand had to be bought from England for sterling. Moreover, navigation acts further increased economic dependence on England by limiting Scotland's shipping, and the Royal Navy, the Royal Scots Navy, was relatively small. Oh, Jim. A series of domestic conflicts, including the 1639-51 Wars of Three Kingdoms. What the heck? I'll have to find out that one. The unrest related to religious differences between 1617 and 1690 exhausted the people and diminished their resources. The so-called Seven Ill Years of the 1690s saw widespread crop failures and famine, while Scotland's deteriorating economic position led to calls for political or customs union with England. However, the stronger feeling among Scots was that the country should become a great mercantile colony power like England. It's all like, I think, Australia trying to get an air force. I think we had 2 aircraft carriers. How about that? After World War II, we had 2 aircraft carriers. In response, a number of solutions were enacted by the Parliament of Scotland in 1895. The Bank of Scotland was established. An act of settling of schools created a parish-based system for public education throughout Scotland, and the Company of Scotland was chartered with the capital to be raised by public subscription to trade with Africa and Indies. In the face of opposition by English commercial interests, the Company of Scotland raised subscriptions in Amsterdam, Hamburg, London for its scheme. For his part, King William II of Scotland and III of England had given only lukewarm support for the whole Scottish colonial endeavour. England was at war with France and hence did not want to offend Spain, which claimed territory in New Granada. One reason for the English opposition to the scheme was the then prevalent economic theory of mercantilism, a concept as widespread and accepted then as capitalism is today. Modern economics generally assumes that constantly growing market, but mercantilism is viewed it as static. That meant increasing one's market share required taking it from someone else. Sorry. This meant the Darien scheme was not simply in competition, but an active threat to English merchants. You know what? I would actually think that's what Trump is doing. England was under pressure from the London-based East India Company, who were keen to maintain their monopoly over English trade. It therefore forced English and Dutch investors to withdraw. Next, the East India Company threatened legal action on the grounds that the Scots had no authority from the king to raise funds outside the English realm, and obliged the promoters to refund the subscription to Hamburg's investors. This left no source of finance but Scotland itself. Good on you, East India. Returning to Edinburgh, the Company of Scotland for trading to Africa raised £400,000 sterling in a few weeks, equivalent to roughly $53 million today, with investment from every level of society totalling about one-fifth of the wealth of Scotland. It was, for Scotland, a massive amount of capital. Scottish-born trader and financier William Paterson had long promoted the plan for a colony in the isthmus of Panama to be used as a gateway through the Atlantic and Pacific, the same principle which much later would lead to the construction of the Panama Canal. Paterson was instrumental in getting the company off the ground in London. He had failed to interest several European countries in his project, but in the aftermath of the English reaction to the company, he was able to get a hearing from his ideas. The Scots' original aim for emulating the East India Company by breaking into the lucrative trading areas of the Indies and Africa was forgotten. The highly ambitious Darien scheme was adopted by the company. Paterson later fell from grace when a subordinate embezzled funds from the company, which then took back Paterson's stock and expelled him from the court of directors. He was to have little real influence on the events after that point. Wow. The first expedition, 1698. Many former officers and soldiers who had little hope of other employment eagerly joined the Darien project, many of them acquainted from serving the army, and several, Thomas Drummond for example, were notorious for their involvement in the massacre of Glencoe. What? In some eyes, they appeared to be a clique, and this was a cause of much suspicion among the members of the expedition. The first council, appointed in July 1698, which was to govern the colony until the Parliament was established, consisted of the Mayor, James Cunningham of Eckett, Daniel Mackay, James Montgomery, William Velch, Robert Jolly, Robert Pickerton, and Captain Robert Pennycook, Commodore of the Expedition Fleet. The first expedition of five ships, St. Andrew, Caledonia, Unicorn, Dolphin, and Endeavour. Wow! There was another Endeavour. Set sail to the east port of Leith to avoid observation by the English warships in July 1898, with around 1,200 people on board. Wow! The journey around Scotland, while kept below deck, was so dramatic that some colonists thought it was comparable to the worst parts of the whole Darien experience. Their orders were to proceed to the Bay of Darien and make the isle called Golden Isle, some few leagues leeward to the mouth of the great river Darien. There make a settlement on the mainland. After calling at Madeira and the West Indies, the fleet made landfall on the coast of Darien on the 2nd of November. The settlers christened their new home Caledonia, declaring, "We do here settle and in the name of God establish ourselves in the honour for the memory of the most ancient renowned name of our mother country. We do, and will from henceforward call the country by the name of Caledonia, and ourselves, successors and associates, by the names of Caledonians." With Drummond in charge, they dug a ditch through the neck of land that divided one side of the harbour of Caledonia Bay from the ocean, and constructed the fort of St. Andrew, which was equipped with 50 cannon, but no source of fresh water. A BBC report in 2014 identified this ditch as the only identifiable remnant of Caledonia. A watch house on the mountain completed the fortification. Although the harbour appeared to be a natural one, it was later to prove that the tides that could easily wreck a vessel trying to leave the colony was a potential threat to the Spanish Empire by being located near the routes of silver shipments. The feasibility of the scheme, especially for the country of Scotland's limited resources, has often been considered doubtful, although some modern authorities consider it might have been have possessed good prospects of success. It had been given support by England. Oh my God, I'd say so. Gee, I don't know. If you play cricket against England or rugby against England, New Edinburgh. Close to the fort, the settlers began erecting huts for the main settlement, New Edinburgh, until 2011, known as Port Esco, Scottish Harbour, now Porto Imbaca, in Guanayala province, the clearing of land to plant yams and maize. Letters sent home by the expedition created a misleading impression that everything was going according to plan. This seems to have been by agreement, as certain optimistic phrases kept recurring. However, it meant the Scottish public would be completely unprepared for the coming disaster. Oh no! Agriculture proved difficult, and the local Indians, though hostile to Spain, were unwilling to trade for combs and trinkets offered by the colonists. Most serious was the total failure to sell any goods to the few passing traders who put into the bay. With the onset of summer the following year, malaria and fever led to many deaths. Eventually, the mortality rate rose to 10 settlers a day. Local Indians bought gifts and fruit and plantains, but these were appropriated by the leaders and sailors, who mostly remained aboard the ships. The only luck for settlers had was a giant turtle hunting, but fewer and fewer men were fit enough for such strenuous work. The situation was exacerbated by the lack of food, mainly due to the high rate of spoilage caused by improper stowing. At the same time, King William instructed the Dutch and English colonies in the Americas not to supply the Scots a settlement, and so not to incur the wrath of the Spanish Empire. The only reward the council had to give was alcohol, and the drunkenness became common, even though it had spared the death of many men already weakened by dysentery, fever, and rotting worm-infested food. Oh, dear. Go. After just 8 months, the colony was abandoned in July 1899, except for 6 men who were too weak to move. The deaths continued on the ships, and only 300 of the 1,200 settlers survived. A desperate ship from the colony had called in at Jamaican city of Port Royal, but it was refused assistance on the order of the English government, who feared the antagonizing the Spanish. On the single ship that returned home, found themselves regarded in disgrace by their country, and were even disowned by their families. The Caledonian, with 250 survivors, including William Patterson and Drummond brothers, made a desperate passage to New York, then just a small town of 5,000, landing on the 10th of August. 4 days later, the Unicorn, commanded by Captain John Addison, limped into New York Harbour. In a letter to Hugh, oh my God, this is just disgusting. Hugh Montgomery, these poor Scottish people. A Glasgow merchant, Robert Donner, reported that sickness and mortality continued to afflict the remnant of the colonists. When the Scots were told that two ships, the Olive Branch and the Hopeful Beginning, had already sailed to resupply the now deserted colony, Thomas Drummond commissioned two sloops to aid their efforts at Darien. Resupply in 1699. In August 1699, the Olive Branch and Hopeful Beginning, with 300 settlers, arrived at Darien to find the ruined huts and 40 overgrown graves. Expecting a bustling town, the ship's captains debated the next move. Then the Olive Branch was destroyed by an accidental fire, and the survivors fled to Jamaica in the Hopeful Beginning and landed at Port Royal Harbour. The Scots were not allowed ashore. Illness struck the crowded ship. On the 20th of September, Thomas E. Drummond set sail to New York in the sloop Anne of Caledonia, formerly the Anne, picking up another fully supplied vessel, the Society, on the way. They arrived at Darien to find the burnt timbers of the Olive Branch rotting on the shore. The word of the first expedition did not reach Scotland in time to prevent the second voyage of more than 1,000 people. A new company flagship, the Rising Sun, boasted 38 cannon, led the way, supported by the Duke of Hamilton. The Hope Burness, a small vessel, the Hope, they called, sailed from Clyde on the west of Scotland, cutting out the perilous round Scotland route, which had taken the previous ships. I can imagine that. The expedition had the blessing of the Church of Scotland, who had appointed Alexander Shields the senior of four ministers. The second expedition arrived in Caledonia Bay on the 30th of November 1699 and found Thomas's Drummond New York sloop already there. Some men were sent ashore to rebuild the huts, which caused others to complain that they had come to join a settlement, not build one. Morale was low and little progress was made. Drummond insisted that there could be no discussion. The fort must be rebuilt, as the Spanish attack would surely come soon. Drummond clashed with the merchants in St. Piers, who maintained the councillors of the first expedition had now lost the status and had Drummond arrested. Initially, bellicose, buyers began to send away for all he suspected of being offensively minded or being allegiant to Drummond. He outraged Kirk Minister by claiming that it would be unlawful to resist the Spanish by force of arms, as all war was unchristian. Burns then deserted the colony on the sloop. The colonists sank into apathy until the arrival of Alexander Campbell from Fonab, sent by the company to organise a defence. He provided a resolute leadership and had been lacking, and took the initiative by driving the Spanish from their stockade at Tubarkey in January 1700. However, Fonab was wounded in a daring frontal attack and became incapacitated with fever. The Spanish force, who were suffering from serious losses from fever, closed in on Fort St. Andrew and besieged it for a month. The disease was still the main cause of death at this time. The Spanish commander called for the Scots to surrender and avoid the final assault, warning that if they did not, no quarter would be given. After negotiations, the Scots were allowed to leave with their guns, and the colony was abandoned for the last time. Only a handful of those who the second expedition returned to Scotland. Of the original 2,500 settlers had set off, just a few hundred survived. Reaction to the disaster. I hate England. The failure of the colonisation project provoked tremendous discontent throughout the lower land Scotland, where most every family had been affected. Some held that England was responsible, others believed that they could and should assist in yet another effort in making the scheme work. The company petitioned the king to affirm their right to the colony. However, he declined, saying that although he was sorry the company had incurred such large losses, declaring Darien would mean war with Spain. The continuing futile debate issues served to further increase the bitter feeling. Hoping to recruit some of the capital by a more conventional venture, the company sent two ships from Clyde, the Speedy Return and the Content, to Guinea coast laden with trade goods. Sea Captain Robert Drummond was the master of the Speedy Return. His brother Thomas, who had played such a large part in the second expedition, was supercargo to the vessel. Instead of trying to sell gold as the company's director intended. However, the Drummond brothers had exchanged goods for slaves, whom they sold in Madagascar, carousing with the buccaneers for whom the island was a refuge. Drummond fell in with a pirate, John Bowen, who offered them loot if they would lend him their ships for a raid on the homeward-bound Indiamen. Drummond backed out of the agreement only to have Bowen appropriate the ships while Drummond was ashore. Bowen burnt the content on Malabar coast when he decided she was no use to him. He later scuttled the Speedy Return after transferring his crew to a merchant ship that he had taken. Drummond's apparently decided against returning to Scotland, where they would have had to explain the losses the ship they had been entrusted with, and was no more was ever heard of him. The company sent another ship, but she was lost at sea. Unable to afford the cost of fitting out yet another vessel, the Annandale was hired in... My God! Annandale was hired in London to trade the Spice Islands. However, the East India Company had the ship seized on the grounds that it was in contravention of their charter. That proved an uproar in Scotland, greatly aided the inflammatory rhetoric of the company's secretary, Roderick Mackenzie, a relentless enemy of the English. Fury at the country's impotence led to scapegoats hanging of the three innocent sailors. My God. This is so confused. Can you imagine the film of this? Just no one would believe it. No one would believe it. Because the English are such romantic heroes. In July 1704, Thomas Haynes Green, a 25-year-old master of the Wootchus and an English merchant ship, arrived in Leith. Mackenzie convinced himself that the ship was an East India Company ship that should be seized in reprisal for the Arendelle. He succeeded in getting the legal authority, and Green, who had been given the command at 21, watched as ship's cargo was impounded and the sails and guns rudder removed over the next 3 months. In December, the crew was arrested for piracy. Although many of the Scotlands were delighted, it soon became clear that directors of the Darren Company, that McCann's charges were not supported by any proof, and it seems that the men would be released. However, Mackenzie suddenly claimed to have ascertained from the crew at Worcester that Green had drunkenly boasted of taking the Speedy Return, killing Drummond's and burning the ship. Despite the total lack of evidence, Green and the two crew, John Madden and James Simpson, were sent to trial in Edinburgh. The prosecution case, which was made in medieval Latin and legal Doric, was unintelligible to the jury and accused alike. The defence advocates seemed to have presented no evidence and fled after the trial. Some jurors resisted bringing the verdict of guilty, but the men were convicted and sentenced to death by hanging. The Queen advised her 30 privy councillors in Edinburgh that the men should be pardoned, but the common people demanded the sentence be carried out. 19 councillors made excuses to stay away from the deliberations of the reprise, fearing the war for the huge mob that arrived in Edinburgh to demand the sailors put to death. Even though they had affidavits on London by the crew of the Speedy Return, who testified that Green and his crew had no knowledge or involvement with the fate of the ship, the remaining councillors refused to pardon them. Green, Madden, and Simpsons were subject to derision and insults of the mob before they were hanged. Green had complete faith that as an innocent man he would be reprieved. He was still looking to Edinburgh Road for a messenger. The hangman placed the noose on his head. Oh, God. The failure of the Darren colonisation project was cited as one of the motivations for the 1707 Acts of Union. According to this argument, the Scottish establishment, landed aristocracy and mercantile elites considered that their best chance of being part of a major power would be to share in the benefits of England's international trade and the growth of English overseas possessions. So its future would have to lie in the unity with England. Furthermore, Scotland's nobles were almost bankrupted by the Darien fiasco. Some Scottish nobility petitions Westminster to wipe out the Scottish national debt and stabilise the currency. Although the first request was not met, the second was the Scottish shilling was given a fixed value to the English penny. Personal Scottish financial interests were also involved. Scottish commissioners had invested heavily in the Darren project and believe that they would receive compensation for their losses. The 1707 Act of Union article granted £3,998.85 sterling. Oh no. Oh yeah, and 10 shillings sterling to Scotland to offset the liability towards the English national debt. Well, that's a pretty amazing story. So the New Caledonia, the little flag, and just disaster, but it's just, yeah, pretty amazing. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.